As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And welcome back to Power Hour, The Athletic's Tuesday National College Football Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Nicole Auerbach. And I am thrilled, as always, to be joined by my friend and colleague, Michael Felder from Stadium, to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week in an hour or less. As a reminder, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the Andy Staples and Friends show. 5 stars, because much like Ari Wasserman's favorite recruits, we want to make an immediate impact just like those 5 stars, and we appreciate your support. And Felder, we are all the way through to week 6 already, somehow. Season's been a blast. Season's been wild. We are coming off a weekend with about a zillion top 25 losses. We've got Penn State, Iowa, a top 5 showdown coming up, which I'm going to. I'm very excited for. But yeah, we are flying. This season's been super fun. You have been, I feel like, thriving. I feel like we've been tweeting at each other at like 3 a.m. watching Hawaii games, which is goals.
Yeah, no, I am week 6. There's still so much to go, but yes. At the end of the day, like I'm in the groove. That's what it is. And yes, I am. Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about it later, but staying up to watch Hawaii play Fresno State and watching Jake Haener battle, that'll be a thing that I remember about this season, just because kids got juice and he put them in a position to try and go out and win, and a tip ball interception cost him a football game after he, for 2 weeks in a row, just has not been able to even move.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this as it was happening, but I was sore from watching football that day, and you were watching Jake Haener play through it and almost Will's team to a win. But this is why college football is great, and which is also why, if you can, stay up all the way through the late games, the Mountain West games, the Hawaii games, because weird, crazy things happen in those games that are just kind of perfectly college football. But let's start the show in a more obvious starting point. This is the top 5 showdown this week. Iowa, Penn State, it's kind of crazy that both of these teams have been in the top 5 a couple weeks now and are in this position, but there's a lot to like about both of them. I want to start with Iowa because I do want to do like an actual breakdown of both of these teams as we head into this game, because I think it's fascinating, and I think that there's certain strengths up against certain strengths, weaknesses against also strengths, and it's just going to be a really fascinating matchup as we try to figure out, you know, kind of who the best team in the Big Ten is. But Felder, my first question is, do you buy the idea of turnover luck? Like, is there something that Iowa is doing that is allowing them and this defense to pile up all of these turnovers week in and week out? Is it something that at some point they're not going to be able to force turnovers in a game and they're going to have to win it with their offense or just defensive stops or whatever it is? Like, what is your take on the concept of turnover luck?
Well, I think there's a couple different avenues here. There are forced turnovers, absolutely. There are offensive-fueled mistake turnovers that you have to either be in the right position, which is good defense to take advantage of, or and there are lucky turnovers where the ball bounces your way, and unlucky ones where the ball doesn't bounce your way. Like we watch every week where a running back fumbles at the mesh, and the ball bounces right back up into their stomach, and they're able to keep that football and maintain possession versus it bouncing sideways and going straight to a defender that was there, the hanger. So, I don't know. Like when you like, I mean, I do know. I've charted all of their turnovers, or specifically the turnovers in their three Power Five games, the two conference games, and obviously the Iowa State game. Like when you watch it, what do you think? Do you think that that's sustainable?
I mean, so. That's where I just keep, like, I feel like earlier in the season, I was like, well, at some point, they're not going to be able to do this. But obviously, it's a really aggressive offense. I mean, sorry, aggressive defense. You know, they're flying to the ball. When you have six different guys get interceptions in a game, you know, it's not like it's just Riley Moss doing something or always kind of finding the ball or forcing something. So, you know, when you're aggressive, I do think you're putting yourself in position. And you have one of the best defensive coordinators in the country in Phil Parker, which I don't think, you know, we kind of talk about him that way. This is a defense that has led the country in takeaways since 2017. Like, I don't know if it's if they're going to be able to do at least one a week, but I do think that it seems to be in their DNA, the way that they play, the way that they anticipate. So I don't know. I mean, I literally for weeks was like, they can't keep this up. They're going to have to win. Like, Spencer Petras is going to have to win them a game.
How many of their turnovers do you think, like, let's say in those three games, how many of those do you think are lucky turnovers that aren't repeatable of results?
I don't know. Give me the numbers. Hit me.
I mean, I'm going through it. Three interceptions against Indiana. So three interceptions against Indiana. We have a lucky one because it's a tip ball from the wide receiver that goes to the guy behind him. That's a lucky interception. You can't expect that to happen every week. We saw it happen with Hawaii and Fresno State. That's not going to happen every week. That tip sometimes goes a different way. You're not there. It doesn't matter. So that's lucky. That's absolutely lucky. But then we get a forced. We have a forced interception with a great break on the ball. Boom. That's a forced interception. You made that happen because you were able to read the quarterback and take that ball away. You have a forced interception because you're forcing the quarterback to throw the football before he's ready, which is pressure from the defensive front. Pressure from the defensive front. The wide receiver is blocking because he thinks that the quarterback's about to start running. And the quarterback tries to force that ball to that wide receiver. The wide receiver's not looking at it, but because they play zone defense, they have all eyes on the quarterback. So guess what? That's an interception. The guy that's getting blocked makes the interception because the wide receiver doesn't even know that the ball is coming. Should have also called offensive pass interference because you're not supposed to be blocking down the field like that. Iowa State, second quarter at the 12-minute mark, it's a 50-50 ball. That's a forced interception. If you throw a 50-50 ball, which in today's college football are probably 70-30 balls because of not just the 50-50 nature of who's going to make the catch, but also the pass interference that's going to get involved with it. When you go up and take that ball away, that's a forced interception. We have a tip ball INT, and unforced, I'm on the fence with this because it's an altered path by the defensive lineman, but at the same time, Bryce Purdy should have thrown a better football, or Brock Purdy should have thrown a better football. But then you have a forced interception that's a batted ball from defensive line, hands up, batted ball. Boom, ball's up. Guess what? We play zone coverage. Guess what that means? We have all eyes on what's happening up front. If this is man coverage, this ball falls on the ground. Nobody touches it. But because it's zone coverage, which is their bread and butter, they are able to go ahead and get that interception because the receiver, they find the ball before the receiver finds the ball. So that's a forced interception. We got two luckies. We're talking about, and I don't count the, what was it? That's in the Maryland game. Maryland, forced interception, pressure with a low throw. The ball has to come out too hot. Talia can't get set up. Boom, pressure. We forced that one. The fumble that they forced, that's absolutely a forced fumble. They punched the ball out. That's great. Tipped INT, that one's forced because it's a PBU that turns into an interception. A stolen, we can call this one luck if you want. But second quarter, 10-27. He undercuts for the interception. I think that that's good defense, and that's also a product of being able to see the quarterback. Fourth quarter, this is my favorite one that they had, I think. So we have the quarterback pressure to the overthrow interception, which I think that when you build pressure in, that does lead to interceptions. But the other, my favorite of all of these turnovers is the fourth quarter, 13-minute mark, 21 seconds to go. It's a forced interception. It looks like cover two. And in cover two, the space for opportunity is in the middle of the defense. They roll from cover two into cover three, which is manipulating what the quarterback sees. They're changing the picture for them. Manipulate what the quarterback sees. They roll from two to three, roll to three. Three, you go high stick, middle safety. Middle safety takes the football away. Why? Because he thinks that he has a void in cover two, except it's not cover two, it's cover three. So for me, I think it's repeatable results. Much in the same way that Cincinnati, as a man team, you expect them to miss tackles or not be able to play well against the run because they're in man all the time, except they don't miss tackles because they're so good at tackling. I think that that's what we have. That's what we deal with. I think if all eyes are on it, you roll to it. And Iowa, to me, they're going to continue to repeat results. That's why, as you mentioned, they've been the leaders in takeaways since 2017. These are repeatable results. And it's not just because they're aggressive on defense. It's because the type of defense that they play with respect to zone. And every single one of these guys wants to find the football and get it to the end zone.
I love that you have a favorite Iowa turnover of the season so far. That feels just on brand. I haven't thought about it.
This is the thing. Like, this is the stuff that I think about. Like, I have good, but they're not the only team that I have. I love with San Diego State when he was healthy, Taylor Haskins. Like, his ability to get down his in man coverage, him taking the ball away. I love that. I love maybe one of my in. I have a favorite Indiana shot play. Came against Cincinnati where they ran a takeoff, then they ran an out and up, and DJ Matthews caught a ball on a Cincinnati corner because they ran a clear out. Same thing with UCLA. That play, and I know they lost this past weekend, but the play to, what is it, Dulcich? The play to Dulcich with the fake screen to the clear out where he catches the ball on a shot play, that's one of my favorite plays of the season. So, yeah, I have, like, small little mini plays. Moments. Yeah.
I love it. So I think that I'm with you that I do think the way that they play makes it replicable. I don't think they're going to get seven turnovers in every game. No. But however, you know, this is clearly part of the way that this defense works. And what's interesting, I think, in the Penn State game is that you've had a Penn State offense in Sean Clifford who, you know, I think it feels like Clifford's been really improved, you know, with his legs and just decision making. He's had John Dotson. It's going to be fascinating going up against that secondary, you know, and their defense has been really good and really solid. And I find that the flip side of that then with Petras, who, you know, we're coming off his best game, but we still haven't, you know, it's clear that, you know, there's going to be times where, you know, maybe he's not going to get a short field and he's not going to have, you know, production from the defense. And, you know, they're figuring out their offense and they're going to be up against a Penn State defense. Like, there's just a lot of interesting layers to this, I think. And I wonder where, you know, when you look at Penn State, what jumps out at their 5-0 start? What feels different than last year? Where do you see growth?
I mean, they still don't run the ball particularly well.
No.
But they are in the top 20 in the country when it comes to explosive plays. Specifically pass plays. They are, I think, 16th in the country in long pass plays. They have and to me that says a lot about what they're doing. Like, when I look at it, like, they're top 30 in long plays in general of 20 plus yards. They're top 25 in plays over 30 plus yards. So they're an explosive football team. They're a team that is, you know, they have eight pass plays of 40 plus yards. They're explosive. They go down the field. They challenge you. And with that challenge, and we saw it this past weekend with Michigan and Wisconsin, if you challenge someone down the field, you don't have to complete all these passes, but if you challenge them, it does provide you space both in the underneath and intermediate to throw the football to guys who are open because somebody has to cover down the field. And it does open up some things in the running game when you have to do that. And so they are not a good rushing football team, speaking of Penn State, but they are a timely rushing football team. And I think that's important because when they have to run, when they have to try to pick up yardage, they have the ability to do that. And that ability is all built into what they do down the field. It's Dotson, but it's also the Parker Washington coming on. The coming on of Parker Washington has been really, really interesting to see. This is a guy that's their second leading receiver, and he's become someone who does feed. Everyone's worried about Dotson over the top. So what do? We find this other guy underneath, and guess what? That's a first down. So I think they do that well. And defensively, I mean, I think Jaquan Brisker is probably my favorite defensive player to watch. I know that's rough to say. I got a lot of guys I like to watch, but he's very high on the list. And there's not a lot of people that do everything for their football team, but he is one of them. He'll fill up a stat sheet. And so as long as he's healthy and he's in the game, because this is a guy that's been hurt time and time again, but keeps coming back and finding a way to stay in the football game or get back in the football game, whether it's riding the bike or getting a rub down or whatever it is, he's always there to make a play. He's killed two football games for them with the pick against Wisconsin, and then obviously the almost pick, but ball back down on fourth down against Auburn.
Yeah, and just to underscore the run game, because, you know, this could easily be a factor that decides the game, is just, you know, it's they were better against Indiana, but they're still struggling on like third and short, fourth and short. It's kind of those, and this isn't necessarily just this year's team. You know, someone pointed this out to me that this has been a multi-year thing, but it's like, you know, short yardage when the other team knows you're going to run, and that's when, you know, you've got to be able to go between the tackles or something. You got to be able to pick up those yardage, and can they do that? Noah Kane doesn't seem to be fully healthy, so there's right. We'll have to see. We're just waiting to learn more about that.
And I think they're better running the football when they don't seem like they're running the football. That's kind of the point that I'm getting at is you have to give people the, like, yes, they throw the ball down the field plenty. Make that a part of it so that you're able to, that's where they steal yards in the run game. Is when I mean, this goes back to what Alabama did this weekend, which was magical, and I absolutely loved it. But Alabama was making a statement and proving a point. And for Penn State, they got to do things a little bit differently because they don't have that same – they don't play six linemen. They don't play six linemen for a quarter of the game the way Alabama does. And their five linemen aren't going to be the guys that are moving, whether it was Wisconsin, as we saw, or in some cases Indiana. And obviously, I don't think this weekend against Iowa, I don't think they're going to move those bodies with five guys. And so, to me, third and short, the reality for them is going to be, let's make them worry about long. Then we can run when we have to.
Yeah, and so I'm pumped. I'm going to be at that game. We'll have more on that next week in next week's Power Hour.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Before we get out of the Big Ten, though, wanted to hit briefly, Michigan-Nebraska is more interesting than it looked a few weeks ago when we saw what felt like a different Nebraska team, or possibly that week zero result against Illinois is going to be one of the ones where we look back at the end of the season, and it's one of the most confusing results of the year because Nebraska's really playing a lot better. Northwestern, that defense is nowhere near what we're used to seeing out of it, but still – They did what they wanted, and so it creates a more interesting game. Michigan comes off of its first win in Madison since 2001. We know Wisconsin's down. We know Wisconsin's got offensive problems, but still a big win for Michigan. Still the kind of benchmark game that they usually don't win. And you know, I know a lot of people have made a lot about this idea of, you know, it's the first time Jim Harbaugh's won as the underdog. And, you know, I don't know why anyone favored Wisconsin in that game. But the idea that Michigan would go into these games against ranked opponents on the road and not win them is something that has been a common issue, a common sentiment during the Jim Harbaugh era. And they go into Madison, they win. They're figuring out some stuff in the passing game. J.J. McCarthy's getting worked in, too. He played some interesting packages and usage in the second half in particular. So do you think Michigan-Nebraska ends up being a good game? Does Nebraska have enough juice to scare Michigan?
I'm very curious to see what Nebraska's rushing defense looks like. And that to me is kind of that's kind of the linchpin here, right? They're what, a top 50 in rush defense. And so the key for them is going to be bottling them up and then playing to over the top. I love, was it Cam Britt Taylor? I think he's a quality corner. I think JoJo Doman is a really good hybrid player as a guy that can, was a safety coming out. Was he from Colorado? I think safety coming down into the box and then being able to make plays in that intermediate to shallow area. So I think that defensively they're going to have to take a hard look at this Wisconsin game. You think about that, like first quarter, first touchdown that Michigan threw, they did challenge. There was eye candy. You got to be disciplined, stick on your diet. Don't worry about the eye candy, but there's eye candy with a jet action to a play action to boom, get set up in the pocket, go over the top for, you know, 35 yards for a touchdown. And you have to, if Nebraska's disciplined in that regard, I think they're going to have an opportunity for this game to be what Harbaugh is comfortable with and what Frost probably doesn't love a ton, but it's going to be like a slog. And I think if you can, but it's about being disciplined in that regard. And obviously, goodness gracious, Wisconsin and the turnovers, like, I think that this should be a good football game. Obviously, it's a circled game on the list to watch. I think it can be tight, but if you start falling for this eye candy, you start looking in the backfield, you get your head stuck too far up your linebackers as a safety, and the next thing you know, they're putting the ball over the top on you.
Yeah, I think that could be a sneaky good game just based on, you know, what we've seen from Nebraska in the last few weeks. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the game I was at this past weekend, which was Cincinnati-Notre Dame. In both of those teams, you know, coming out of that game, I wrote that if Cincinnati goes undefeated, let's have the college football playoff conversation. And what else can they do? And you go undefeated and the committee decides that they probably shouldn't have put you at number 7. They probably should have dropped you back down. Let's come up with reasons to make sure that this isn't even close enough at the end of the season. And this year, if you go undefeated, you have two Power 5 opponents that you had on your schedule. We know how hard it is. Can't control the AAC to being down. In a weird year where there's lots of flawed teams, the Bearcats certainly have their own flaws too, but why not give them a chance? So that's what I ended up writing. But I think it ended up being a more interesting game than it looked for a while. It looked like Cincinnati was going to run away with it for a stretch. And I think if they had scored on the drive coming out of halftime, it could have gotten that way. But Drew Pine is an interesting storyline to follow now for Notre Dame. Are they switching quarterbacks? And what do they get out of him? What does the ceiling look like with him? And then Cincinnati's defense looked great, but their offense took a little while to get going. You've got Luke Fickell kind of banging the drum now for a Desmond Ritter Heisman campaign. There's just a lot coming out of that game. Cincinnati's first road win over a top 10 team in its program history. Clearly the biggest win in program history. What did you make of it? What did you learn about either of those teams?
I think everything is the same. Thought Cincinnati was going to win. going into the football game? They did. I thought Cincinnati was a better football team than Notre Dame. They are. Thought Cincinnati defense was one of the best in the country. It is. And I don't know, like, are we jazzed about a guy that went 9-for-22? That's what we're excited about for Notre Dame going forward?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow, I mean, not good.
They're looking for anything right now.
Sure, looking for love in all the wrong places. Like, are you kidding? Like 9-for-22? That's not even half. So I just, for me, the game never felt close.
No.
And it didn't feel close. Even when Cincinnati stalled out on offense, it still felt like they're one thing away from something happening. It never felt that way for Notre Dame. And obviously you throw in and Michael Mayer, and hopefully he's okay and he's healthy, because he is, their offense runs through him because they cannot run the football. And I don't know. I think this is in a Saturday that showed us a lot of really tremendous defensive performances from Alabama, from Georgia. Obviously, I think Cincinnati belongs in that same realm with the way that they get things done. I think that there is something heroic, something remarkable about being willing to kind of hang your ass out there, playing man coverage almost exclusively, to the point where as they built that 2-score lead, they started to play zone, and I was getting mad because then they started giving away these little like chintzy passes, and that's not what they do. Just play the thing that you play. Stay in man. You've got Ahmad Gardner. Stay in man.
He was great.
And Deshaun Pace is one of my favorite players to watch in the country. He's so good. He fits into that hybrid safety linebacker size-wise. He's only like 218. And they line him up. And this is, I don't know, this is a stroke of genius from Luke Fickell. They line him up between 6 and 8 yards off the ball instead of that traditional 4 to 6 yards off the ball from a regular linebacker. They line him up that far off the ball, and then he cleans up a bunch of mess. And it's beautiful to watch. It's really cool. It's really fun. And then obviously you throw in Devers, and DeBlanco, and like DuBlanco, and they got these guys that can make plays. Everybody they tackle so well. I don't know there's a better tackling team in the country than Cincinnati. I absolutely think they belong in the discussion. At the end of the day, especially with what happened in the Pac-12 with Oregon and Stanford in the overtime, they're going to be in the discussion. I think that Oregon clearly has a better win than Cincinnati. They have a better win than Cincinnati can ever get based on the schedule right we have right now. But at the end of the day, we'll see what happens.
It's more of an opening, right? Like, it's an opening, it makes it a question, and then does Oregon lose again?
Right. That's the whole thing. It makes, like, the razor's edge is incredibly sharp for a lot of teams, whether it's Ohio State or it's obviously we've mentioned Oregon. I will say this. I'm applauding Texas A&M out the paint. Florida out the paint. Don't got to worry about them anymore. Don't have to do radio hypotheticals about, well, what if this. I'm like, no, it doesn't matter. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes itself out. My takeaway from that game is Cincinnati is very good defensively. They're going to continue to try to figure things out offensively. But man, again, that's a defense, like, I love to watch it. Like, I think there's a play against Indiana where Pace comes down. It's man coverage. I love this. And we're seeing it all over the place. We're seeing it at Oklahoma too, where instead of running all the way across formation with motions, teams are trading and rotating. And I think it's really to the defense's advantage. And just for the record, all you spread offensive guys with all your motions, you've brought this upon yourself. And defenses have finally adjusted. Instead of having my nickelback run behind the linebackers all the way around the formation for you to set up a bubble, guess what? Now we're trading it, and now we've got a guy who's actually in position. But anyways, one of my favorite plays is against Indiana where Pace comes down and you see tight end goes across the formation to go pick up the defensive end. Runs coming down inside. The hole's about 3.5 yards wide. Big hole, great hole. Pace punches the guy down right there in the hole. It's a beautiful play. But they tackle so well in the open field. And you have to when you play man, because everybody, with the difference between that and – who are we talking about with Iowa? The difference between Iowa and Cincinnati is Iowa has 22 eyeballs on the football every single play. Cincinnati has six. They got eight. They probably have 12 eyeballs on the play. 12 versus 22. And it's great that so you have to make open field tackles because you don't have that same rally capability when a wide receiver is gone down the field. You're also gone down the field.
Yeah, I thought the tackling was really apparent. When you watch him in person, it's just it was really impressive. Love Sauce. I like how you're calling him his full name, but we gotta get Sauce in here because it's just a great nickname.
Sure.
Sauce Gardner, just like it just rolls off the tongue. But yeah, I really like them. And I think one of the cool things as we talk about these teams that we buy into, that we really like this year, they're all great defenses. And this is, you know, in this era of college football, I feel like we do so often talk about the spread offenses and the different wrinkles and offense being, you know, a little bit ahead of the defenses. And it is pretty cool to see, you know, well, okay, I would say cool. I would also say, like, terrifying and just really frustrating to watch Georgia's defense, right? And to see people try to go up against that and have no answers. And then, you know, you talk about Iowa's defense and the way that they play and the takeaways and Penn State, you know, and Cincinnati. Like, there's just a lot of really great defenses that we're getting to see this year. And, you know, in terms of the playoff picture, you know, we talk a little bit about Oregon, talk about Ohio State. They each have a loss now. ACC is eliminated. You mentioned a couple other teams that are essentially eliminated. Notre Dame has a loss to another team that would be in playoff conversation. So, you know, you're talking about two teams that were in the playoff last year in Clemson and Notre Dame that aren't there. And then, you know, maybe Oklahoma, they look shaky, but they don't have a loss yet. But maybe it's, you know, Ohio State or, you know, whoever, right? Some of these teams that we're used to seeing in the playoff. And I just think, A, it's great for Luke Fickell and the program and everything they're building at Cincinnati to keep this alive for the rest of the season, to get this idea that they might have a chance, even though we know how hard that is for a Group of Five team. But I just think it's good for all of us because we've kind of guaranteed some fresh meat in the playoff. And I know that not everybody loves the playoff or the prism that we talk about the sport, but I just think that stuff ends up mattering for fans who are, you know, kind of loosely paying attention to the national scene or care about my conference did this, my team did this, you know, what's happening in the other part of the country. That stuff does matter. And it sort of gets back to the conversation we had a million times over the summer, which is about access and engagement and reasons for playoff expansion. So I just love where we are 6 weeks in. And, you know, everyone's tossing around the words parity and all these different things. You can talk about, like, what's wrong with Clemson, what's wrong with Oklahoma, what's wrong with Ohio State. But the idea of getting to spend a ton of time talking about Cincinnati's defense and putting it in the category with the other great defenses in the country, that's fun. And I think that's great. And it's a level of respect and storylines and interesting stuff that we don't always have. And so just wanted to...
I'd say we always have them. I'd say people just don't care about them.
Well, that too. That too.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
That gets us to another topic I wanted to make sure we got in, because, again, not everybody talks about these things. And outside of Cincinnati, I have not heard much conversation about some of the other Group of Five teams, even some of the ones that we usually do keep a second screen on. And Felder, I know that you love Mountain West football. You love all of these levels, ECU. You love all of these levels of football. So let's talk about some of the Group of Five teams people are not paying enough attention to. Like when you're looking at the schedule this Saturday, any listener out here, and you're thinking about, hey, let's take a peek about somebody, or let me adopt a different team that I want to kind of adopt this year. Let's go. Who we got? Who you like the most?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the schedule this Saturday, obviously Coastal, they take on Arkansas State. That's Thursday night, no problem. But when I get into it, like I am one, my parents met at ECU. So that is, I've, outside of playing football at UNC, I have been to more ECU football games than any other school. We used to go to Dowdy Ficklin all the time. You can find me in Ficklin, First Down Pirates. Like, I'm all in on them. They're starting to turn a corner. I did not expect them to. Like, they should have beat South Carolina. I did not expect them to beat Tulane. They were able to get a dub there. Holton Ahlers is incredibly mercurial as far as quarterbacks go. A guy that just, I mean, they got to figure out how to wrangle him in. Like, he's, 7-5 touchdown to interception ratio, but who's my guy at Arizona? McLeod. Him and McLeod, like, something's going to happen. Sometimes it's going to be very good. Sometimes it's going to be very bad. And it's not like the Graham Mertz version of things at Wisconsin where it's just, like, waiting to see how bad it's going to be. It's more, like, exciting and fun until it's very bad. But Holton Ahlers is he's been interesting to watch for East Carolina. Obviously, Mike Houston is trying to turn that proud program around. I think that they've got some really good young guys there. So if you're going to get a chance to watch ECU, I'm going to watch ECU all the time. They play UCF this weekend, which is an interesting one because they've got their own set of problems, right? Like it's been wild to watch them with the battling back against Boise State, they battled back against Boise State. The crushing loss to Louisville, which was, flat out devastating. And then you add insult to injury by losing your quarterback, and then you go out and lose to a Navy team that I don't think is particularly good. So I love watching them play. UTSA is going to, like, I'll tell you what, UTSA, Western Kentucky, that's going to be on Stadium. So watch stadium.com or Stadium if you have it. Like, that's going to be, if you like points, that's a game to watch. Zappy, I hope Zappy's healthy because he got beat up a little bit against Michigan State last weekend. But Frank Harris is a dog. And if people don't know who this guy is, he's going to have at least a cup of coffee in the NFL. This kid can play. And watching him over the last, like, three seasons go from, as I mentioned before with, like, McLeod, a high-energy guy, and Ahlers, like, a guy that has some energy, is going to make something special happen, to now harnessing that power of what he can do and understanding where the ball needs to be and when the ball needs to come out, he's been really awesome to see. So I think UTSA is a team. And Western Kentucky, too. Like, it wasn't tight against Michigan State, but it was a ball game where you did feel like if Michigan State made a mistake or two, then we'd be looking at a one-score game as we sat in the fourth quarter. So those, to me, I'm locking those guys. Oh, and by the way, Nevada too. You want to see a quarterback that has control over his football team? Carson Strong has his coach's complete confidence and total control over this offense. Like, watching Carson Strong last week against Boise State, when he got mad at his coach for not letting him go for it on fourth down when they were already giving Boise State the blues, was remarkable. And obviously, I think there's something interesting about Boise State where they're a football team that, man, we talked about it with UCF and they're kind of up and down, up and down, up and down. Boise State kind of fits into that same zone. I think they have two losses that have been devastating to their psyche, and I don't think they recover for the rest of the year. They got BYU coming up, and that's going to be a rough game. But the way they lost to UCF after being in control most of the game was tough. and the loss to Oklahoma State, and I will say this, I said this on Campus Insiders, talking to your colleague, Matt Fortuna, I will say this every time that anybody asks me about Oklahoma State, they are a team that should have one loss. It was a remarkable one-to-one getting screwed. Not a, this was a bad call and then this happened, but a one-to-one of, Boise State is a one-to-one of being screwed. J.L. Skinner picked up a forced fumble and ran it back for a touchdown that should have ended the game with Boise State as the winners, and instead they blew it dead. This is not the same as the holds that went uncalled against Florida State, or the holds against Florida State that went uncalled in that ball game this past weekend. This is a one-to-one instant touchdown that just, brutal. And I get it. I do think that Syracuse got screwed with those calls, but I don't think it's nearly as one-to-one as what happened with J.L. Skinner.
I love just how detailed the rundown is of all of this and the hot takes still about penalties and calls and decisions, which I respect. I love it. You're still so mad about it. I love that. I respect that.
The biggest problem for me is it happened to a defense. Like, the whole time to a defense, and that's very frustrating. Also, nobody else made a tackle until he was already 30 yards down the field. That's you. Somebody else is supposed to be somewhere. Everybody didn't get held. But this was a defense having something taken away from them that are so hard to earn. We talked about it with Iowa, right? How do you earn these turnovers? And to have a turnover that's earned like that be eliminated is brutal. Just don't blow the whistle. You can always go back, but you can never go forward if you blow the whistle. Just don't blow it. That's all.
I actually feel like this year we've had people wait to blow the whistle for that reason in a lot of games. Sure. Like I actually think like as nationally that has been better than usual.
Sure. And I know Mississippi State fans are going to be upset because of what Memphis was able to do. That was Mississippi State.
Yes.
Memphis.
Yep.
And I'll tell you this. That's one I don't care about. Why? Because it's one of my favorite rules in all of football that nobody even knows about, that if the punting team touches the ball, the worst case scenario is you get the ball where they touch it. So you should just always pick it up and do whatever, which is why a punting team should hand the ball to the ref instead of just touching it and moving on from there. And I love to see that rule in action. It's one of the first rules that I didn't know about playing high school football that I learned going to college. So I finally got to see it actually in action, and I'll take it any way I can get it.
Well, that leads us into last call, because I feel like we're celebrating stuff. We're venting about stuff. I will go first. Mine is a rant this week. So last call is always a segment where we rant or rave. It's something we would do at 2 a.m. at the bar, cheers to something, we're extra riled up, we're ranting about something. And mine is about fans booing their own player. Now, we talked about this a little bit with Spencer Rattler and the Oklahoma fans chanting, "We want Caleb," his backup, mm-hmm. and then straight up booing their starting quarterback. It was jarring. It was really uncomfortable to watch from home.
It's gross. I'm sure
it was really uncomfortable to watch there. Like, this is your dude. You're booing your own player and chanting it back. Like, he can hear you. He can hear you. And in a much, much smaller scale, this happened at Notre Dame this weekend when I was there. And it was, so obviously the fans want Drew Pine to be playing. And so he comes in for a snap and everyone cheers. He comes out and I believe it was Buckner, and everybody boos. And then Pine starts to jog back onto the field and everybody cheers again. And I just don't understand. Like, I got the point. I get what you were trying to do. But I don't understand the point of booing your own players to make that point. And I get that quarterback play can be really frustrating across the country. That everyone's, the joke is always, right, that the most popular guy on campus is the backup quarterback. But to do it in a way where you are chanting or booing your own player to make that point, I just don't like it. I feel like fans, it's been a weird place over the last year since we've come back to games, and you had issues at NBA games and fans getting banned for life and all these different things. But I almost just feel like people forgot how to be around other people and kind of forgot that in these situations, you're the fan of your team. You should be nice to them even when you're mad. And these are college kids that are not professionals, that are not getting paid salaries to do this. And they can hear you. They can hear you. They can hear you booing them. And I just feel like it is really inappropriate. Now that it's happened twice, it was nowhere near the same as the Rattler stuff, but I just don't like it. I don't like it. It needs to stop.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sucks, and you're being a lot nicer to these people than I am. I think that they live under this shroud of anonymity that allows them to say whatever. It's the same thing with people with random avatars on Twitter that talk a bunch of trash to players who do stuff that they could never, ever do in their life, or even, like, people that talk trash to you, and they live under this nothing bad can happen to me world, and it sucks. And I think it absolutely sucks. It's one thing to be, like, booed, heckled when you're the opposition coming into, you know, quote-unquote hostile territory.
It's part of the experience, right?
It's another thing to have your own fans turn on you. I am, shout out to the Chicago Sky, up 2-1 on the Sun for the WNBA playoffs. Super hyped for them. We'll see how that shakes out. Haven't watched as much as I was before, but mostly that's because I'm tired of watching sports now that we're in the middle of the season. But the big thing for me, I'm going to end up, we didn't get to talk about Alabama. I know they've talked about Alabama before, but I just wanted to do cheers to Nick Saban for hulking up. Like, that's what I love. I love to see it. And I kind of alluded to it, after only rushing for 91 yards against Florida, Nick Saban looked at himself, he looked at his football team, and he said, hey, man, that's not gonna cut the mustard. So obviously against Southern Miss, they go out and do what they got to do. But the real key was here against Ole Miss, and people were like, well, maybe it's just because Ole Miss runs that 3-2-6, 3-3-5. I'm like, no. Because he could have beat the heck out of them by pushing the ball all over the field and looking cute and being fancy. This was not about Ole Miss and their defense. This was about Alabama, their inability to convert some third and shorts or fourth and shorts against Florida, and their inability to move bodies. And they said, you know what? We're going to move bodies. By the way, write this name down, Kendall Randolph, number 85 for Alabama. He is an offensive lineman. And he's an offensive lineman in their 12 personnel packages that wears 85. So they treat him as a tight end. What they're actually doing is playing a six-man offensive line. You throw late two in there, and now you've got 6.5 offensive linemen in the game, and they run the football. They shoved it down Ole Miss's throat. There was no adjustment to make. There were no personnel packages to change. And I hope Jason McClellan finds a way to get healthy, because I think he's gonna be really special at some point. But I really like to see, and it's a direct response to how bad they were against Florida running the football. I think there's a little bit of a response to how good Georgia has been running the football, and people calling Georgia the most physical team in the country. And Nick Saban, it's one of those things where, listen, you don't tug on Superman's cape. And he sat there and he said, listen, you know what we're going to do? Brian, do you know prior to Saturday what Brian Robinson's career high carry total was for a game? Take a guess.
I got nothing.
He ran for 36 times on Saturday. Just take a guess. Just give me a guess. Venture a number.
18.
13. 13 was his high career carries. They ran the ball 36 times. He ran it 36 times. 36. That is not, oh, well, Ole Miss's defense. That is, I am making a point. We're going to force this issue. It's going to happen. And I don't know, for me, that was just, It speaks to the essence of why I really appreciate and respect Nick Saban. I love the pettiness that lives inside of him, and the idea that
because
he wasn't making just a point to beat Ole Miss. He didn't just go into the game to win. He went into that game to put it on film, to let everyone know, you're on notice. We can push people around too. And he made his team have to do it. Like, this is kind of the equivalent of when your mom makes you do something because you've done it wrong multiple times. And then your mom's like, no, I'm going to stand here and watch you while you put the dishes away because you keep messing up. And then you do it the right way. And she's like, so you can do it the right way. We'll go back to having fun now, but at least I know you can do it the right way. So when I ask you to do it, you're going to do it this way. And that's the whole thing with their run game. You didn't do it the right way against Florida. I want to see if you can do it the right way. you could do it the right way. That's the way we do it. Like in the words of Mike Lowry from Bad Boys, when Martin Lawrence is driving the car and Mike Lowry said, from now on, that's how you drive. For Alabama, from now on, that's how you run block. From now on, that's how we run the football. That's what we do. When he says, that's how you shoot. From now on, that's how you shoot. From now on, that's how we run. And I love that about him. I think we're gearing up for a really epic SEC championship game where heavyweight, we don't get this a lot from a boxing standpoint, but at least we're going to have a heavyweight fight. And we're going to see two teams, barring something wild happening, two teams that can eat a punch and then deliver a blow. And I like that. That's the football that I like. Like going through, and when you find out that Alabama ran, if they came out for 80 snaps, and I know that some of those snaps got eliminated via penalty or late timeouts, but you run 12 personnel 20 times out of 80, that's a quarter of your plays. Let's rock and roll. And then you also run 20, you run 23, you run 22 and 13. Let's rock and roll, baby. They want to be tough. Listen, last year was nice. Best offense ever. But Nick Saban wants you to know he's a tough guy. That's it.
Yeah. I love calling that hulking out. I just really love that. So let's wrap there on the hulking out. We will watch them continue to do so. And thank you, as always, for listening to Power Hour. If you are not already an Athletic subscriber, you can sign up at theathletic.com/Nicole for a very special deal on an annual subscription. There will be one true pod later this week in the feed with Max Olson, Jason Kersey, and Sam Kahn, Andy Staples, new dad Ari Wasserman. They'll be around the feed this week. And we will be back next Tuesday for the next episode of Power Hour. For Michael Felder, I'm Nicole Auerbach. Thank you for listening.